Hi, Drew and Jonathan Scott here.
Reminding you that a lot of life's firsts are better with help from American Family Insurance.
Like your first home expansion.
Or your first big lightning strike.
There's a first for everything. Get the right home policy at the right price with the right help from American Family's agents.
Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Come on in.
I'm Lainey.
And I'm Laura Beth.
And we are Steel Magnolias.
Two sisters who love family, traditions, and all things Southern.
We've got plenty of room at our table, so pull up a chair.
Hey, Lainey.
Hi, Laura Beth.
Boy, this is probably going to be my best birthday ever.
Oh,
it is. It is. We have a special guest with us today. Miss Fanny Flagg is with us. And I want to just even mention the divine certainty of this, because we were asked this summer, there was a magazine article that was interviewing us. And they said, if you could interview anybody, who would it be? And we threw out two names, Dolly Parton and Fanny Flagg. And so to have you with us today, Fanny, is just such a treat. So welcome to the Steel Magnolias podcast.
Well, thank you. And happy birthday, 21 years old.
Yeah.
Lainey, you're telling the truth, right?
Yes,
it's your birthday. Well, I've been waiting so long to get on with you gals. I just couldn't wait. I'm stuck in California. And I said, well, if I can just talk to my Southern girls, I'll be happy.
Oh, so, well, thank
so
you.
So happy birthday. Don't you have something special?
Yes. I could not have Fanny Flagg and a birthday celebration without a beautiful plate of fried green tomatoes.
With happy birthday, Laura Beth.
Thank you.
What's your Dewey wish?
I already got my wish, so that was just bonus right there.
Thank
well,
you.
Let me introduce you formally to our listeners, just in case, surely they know you, but just in case they haven't gotten a chance to hear your works, I'll just formally introduce you. Fanny's career started in the fifth grade when she wrote, directed, and starred in her first play titled The Whoopi Girls. At age 19, she was already writing and producing television specials in her hometown of Birmingham, Alabama. At age 20, she went to New York and immediately began writing and acting on Candid Camera. She made over 75 appearances on The Tonight Show. She went on to distinguish herself as an actress and a writer in television films and in theater. She is the New York Times bestselling author of Daisy Fay and the Miracle Man, Fried Green Tomatoes at the Whistle Stop Cafe, Welcome to the World, Baby Girl, Standing in the Rainbow, I'm going on and on, A Red Bird Christmas, Can't Wait to Get to Heaven, and this is a personal favorite of mine, The All-Girls Filling Station's Last Reunion. So Flagg's script for Fried Green Tomatoes was nominated for an Academy Award and the Writers Guild of America Award and won the highly regarded Scripter Award for Best Screenplay of the Year. She also won the Harper Lee Prize for Fiction. Fanny loves all animals, especially human beings, and lives happily in California and Alabama. What a stretch of landscape you cover with your residences.
So now, Lainey, how old am I?
Well, we're Southern. We don't tell that.
We don't tell it. And you know, every time I hear that, I barely got out of high school. I am dyslexic. I can't spell. If you told me to diagram a sentence with a gun to my head, I couldn't do it. How I wrote all those books, I don't know. It's just a miracle.
Well, that is amazing.
I was curious about that because I have read that about you. So do you have somebody encouraging you along the way, or how did you really navigate that piece of your writing?
Well, you know, I would write something down. And, when I first started, I would write something down and I'd memorize it.
Yeah.
And I do these little sketches, and then I would write it out, but I would always memorize it. But then later on, as you start writing books, you get editors.
Yes.
And they help you. As a matter of fact, the first book, the Daisy Fay book, started out as a short story. I'll tell you this story. It's a true story. I came to Santa Barbara, California, and they had a Santa Barbara's Writers Conference, and I saw that Eudora Welty, the great Mississippi writer, was going to be there. Well, I just said, I've got to go just to see her. She was my idol. So I went, and I sat there in the auditorium, and the man came out, and he said, well, now the competition this year will be a short story, and we'll give you one word, and that word is childhood. And so I'm sitting in this room with these brilliant writers and, you know, they're English majors and all this stuff. And I'm going, oh, God, I'm so embarrassed. I don't know what to do. But I thought if I didn't write this story, they'd kick me out. So I thought, how can I do this without embarrassing myself? So I got a piece of like a little child's notebook. So I wrote this story as a little sixth grade person would write it. So I said, if I had any misspelled words or bad grammar, they'd think, oh, she meant that on purpose, you know? So I did that little story called Daisy Fay and the Miracle Man, and they said, don't use your real name because we don't want to play favorites. Just pick a name. So I said, okay, I'm going to be Edna Ferber. So I stayed there the whole week, and at the end of the week, Eudora Welty came out, and she said, the winner of the short story is Edna Ferber.
Wow.
And so I felt so happy, but I felt embarrassed because I thought I cheated because they actually think that that I can write, you know. Yeah. So anyhow, I went to New York and this editor called me and he had lunch with me. And he said, we'd like for you to take your short story and write an entire novel. Mm. And I just burst into tears and I said, I'm so sorry, I can't. I don't know how to spell. And he looked at me and he said, well, why do you think we have editors? You don't have to spell. He said, most writers can't spell. So that started it. Isn't that amazing?
Wow. Yeah. That is absolutely amazing. And how encouraging to anyone listening that if they are facing anything where they feel like it's a hiccup to them actually getting their story out.
Yeah.
There's teams of people that can always come along.
They always help you. And everybody also said, they said, oh, well, you know, now that you have spell check, that's going to be a huge help. And I said, if I could spell the first three letters, yes, but it's not because it just takes too long. So I can't fool with it. But it's true. And I think, you know, they always say you take a something that seems like it's not good and it turns into something good. Because I had such trouble in school, I had to listen very carefully.
Yes.
And I think that if anything that I really, in the books, that I really can do is dialogue, because I hear people. Love to hear how people say things and talk. And so that has helped me, too. So it can work both ways, you know. Things that look bad are meant for good.
Well, now that's interesting, because when I think about good dialogue, there is some great dialogue in the South.
Yes.
Oh, the best.
No wonder you like to write about small towns in the South.
I do. I love the way Southerners express themselves. They're just, you know, the difference is night and day. It's like we're from a different country. When I was living in New York working on Candid Camera, if I'd hear a Southern accent, I'd just run over. Where are you from? They'd say Alabama, Georgia, Mississippi. We just hug and we talk. And it's just been a blessing. And it's true, the way that people use the language. I remember one time I was had a massage, and I think I was down in Birmingham or something. And the woman was bringing me one of those robes that you put on, like a terry cloth robe.
Uh-huh.
And it was kind of worn. And she looked at it and she said, oh my, she said, this robe is as thin as a bee's wing. And I thought, oh, okay, only Southerners would think
that's true. Yes.
Isn't it true?
It's but so it helped you relax, I bet, a whole lot. Yeah. You were ready for your massage then.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
Believe it or not, I said, believe it or not, we have a lot of listeners in California. Mm-hmm. You would think talking about Southern culture, it would be mostly Southerners. It is not. We have listeners all over the country and many in California.
A lot. Yes. Yeah.
A lot of Californians have come here for business and things. So, you know, there are some here. I've got friends that are from Georgia, Alabama, whatever, here in California.
Okay. Well, I was wondering, since you spend a lot of your time there, what do you miss about the South when you're in California?
The people.
Yeah.
The food. Yes. You know, they have this California cuisine, which means one green bean that's not cooked. You know, all of the stuff. No, I miss the food. I miss the people. I miss the humor.
Yeah.
The sweetness and the friendliness. And that's kind of why I write about the South, because I think that people that have never been there don't understand how really lovely people are, and you know, they just don't get it. And it's like you go into a store and you feel they make you feel so welcome, you know.
Yeah.
Anywhere you go, they say, "Hi, how are you doing, hon? What you gonna have today?" And this and that, and they care, you know. And that's what I miss. I'll tell you what I don't miss. I don't miss mosquitoes.
Oh, Lord have mercy.
They bite me. But other than that.
Well, I got this interview is a gift, but I also got a big gift from my husband this week, who got me a screened in porch. So speaking of mosquitoes, that's how badly I've been wanting something. It's not big porch, but it's just enough for me to kick my feet up without getting bit.
There's nothing better than a screened in porch.
Yeah.
Oh, it's just lovely. Sit out at night. Oh, it's freezing in California at night. You can't, the sun goes down, it's cold. So you know, I miss those long, that's a good one. I miss those Southern evenings where you sit out on the porch and you hear the katydids and the this and the bird. Oh, that's so lovely. Yeah.
Yes. Well, we want to make sure, and the real reason we got together is because we want to talk about your latest book.
Oh, yes.
It
came this morning. I cannot wait. Wonder Boy of Whistle Stop. And this is a sequel to your bestseller, Fried Green Tomatoes. It's going to be available everywhere this week, October 27th.
Tomorrow.
Yes. So, Fanny, tell us about this sequel. My goodness, long-awaited.
Do you remember in the movie? Do you remember the little boy that Ruth's son? He lost his arm.
Yeah.
And this is sort of a revisitation. Is what happened to him? What happened? And the book starts where it's in 1940. And she's riding the train, and the little boy is running along the railroad track. It's on the cover, waving at the train, and she waves back. And then she turns to her husband, and she said, "Honey, I think that little boy had an arm missing." Mm-hmm. And he says, "Huh?" And she says, "Yeah, I wonder what happened." He said, "Well, something did." And so every time she'd go through that little town again, she'd say, "I wonder what happened to that little boy that had the one arm." So the book is about whatever happened to that little boy. Okay. So we see him now as a grown man, and he has a daughter. And the daughter somehow, and I can't tell you how because I'll give away the plot, meets Evelyn Couch, and they get together. And they go back to the Whistle Stop Cafe, and it's all closed down. The whole town is gone. But they get together, and something magical happens. And I'm not supposed to say what, but.
Okay. That's intriguing, all right.
Well, what I would love to know is how long have you been thinking this was the sequel? Because Fried Green Tomatoes, it's been about 30-plus years. Mm-hmm. So that's quite the time gap. So I just kind of wondered, has this been in your head for a long time?
No, I wish it had been. I just thought, well, look, that movie, you couldn't do better. It was terrific. Why even bother? But my agent, they were talking about doing a series, TV series. They were talking about a musical play about it, and this and this and this. And I kept saying, no, I think it's, I don't want to do it again. But all of a sudden, and this is between, you know, us, I got so homesick. And with all of the hazara in the world and everybody's mad at everybody and they're fighting and all that, I thought, I want to go back home and I want to revisit that place where it was so happy and all that. And so I thought, well, you know what? I'll do it. I'll write this. I'll just write the follow-up. And I didn't know how it was going to end. I never do. So I thought, well, I'll just try it. And that's how it came about, really. And it was kind of me wanting to get back home. Wow. And, you know, I haven't been able to go anywhere.
Yeah.
I can't travel. I thought I was going to get to come back. Cause when I have a book, come out, I always go to Alabama first, then I go to Nashville and Atlanta and all that. And that's where I go. And I'm not able to go home, this time, but you know, seeing you, Gals, it's like a visit. Yay.
Well, you love the theme, even, I would say, of going home. It's in other books that you've written. So when you say going home, what does that mean to you? Like, what sort of sentiments is that bringing up?
Oh, I think going back to a time where you felt safe and secure, and it was a different time. I was raised in the late 40s and 50s, and that was a wonderful time. I wouldn't take anything for being the age I am, because everybody seemed to get along and pull together, and the country was more together, and it was just a different time. And I think when things get in turmoil, you always want to go back to that time where you were the happiest. And the original book was based on that, because I had lost both my parents. I'm an only child, and I lost both my parents. And I was in New York doing a show, and after the show was over, I came back home. And I don't know if you've ever been through this, but I was sort of wanting to somehow get in touch with them, comfort myself. And I started driving around places that I used to live, and I drove out to the little cafe that my aunt owned and that the book was based on. And I was eating the foods I ate as a child, and I realized I was trying to get back that feeling of when I was, you know, younger. And I realized that I wanted to bring them all back and bring them all back to life and tell the story of that little cafe. And so it is a way of, I think, wanting to comfort ourselves and, you know, and I do, people always say, you know, that writers never get over their childhood. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's my childhood, of course, is the South. And that's what my home is the South and the stories of the South.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's honoring to your family members too. Yeah. I mean, not that any of us are perfect, but making characters out of them, yeah, books, yeah, is very honoring.
Thank you. Well, see, now this is the cookbook about the whistle stop, but I was going to show you that the actual person that I was writing about was my real aunt. Her name was Bess Fortenberry. Here's a picture of her. Can you see that?
Oh, sweet.
Wow. It's a cat. And she was so funny and so sweet. And, you know, I just loved going out there to see just that cafe when I was little, because I was raised in an apartment in Birmingham, big city. It was a big city then, big industrial sort of, yeah. And so I lived in an apartment as an only child. And so my mother would take me in the car and we'd drive outside of Birmingham to this little cafe. And it was a little small town. And I just always longed to have, you know, been in that little small town. And everybody seemed so happy, and the community was so good. And I think that's what people are missing, is the community, the feeling of everybody knows you. Yeah. And, you know, they know your family. They know, and you've got community.
They know your people.
They know who your people are. Yeah. Sometimes that's not good. But you know, it's wanting to belong, and now they're finding out that people that have that kind of community are living longer. Mm-hmm. That's a fact, and so it's not only, you know, we miss it, it's healthy. So we have to form new communities. And my I have no brothers and sisters, as I've said, but and my community are friends now, so we can pick them.
Yeah. That makes real good people.
Yeah, well, you've got a darling sisters. Yeah, see, y'all are lucky.
Yeah. Well, we'll get just maybe one or two questions more.
Sure.
Yeah. I would love to know who are some of your favorite Southern authors?
Well, my first one that I just loved was Eudora Welty, who I got, as you know, got to meet. I just loved her. And of course, Harper Lee, Truman Capote, Tennessee Williams,
did you get to meet all of them?
No, I met Harper Lee.
Okay.
I met Eudora Welty. I did not meet Tennessee. I saw Tennessee Williams in a room. I did not meet him, but I saw him, but that was wonderful. And I never met Truman Capote. But all of the great Southern writers, you know, I just, because I relate to what they're saying. You know?
Sure.
Who are your favorites? Who do you like, Lainey?
Oh, gosh. Well, I mean, Harper Lee's iconic, mm-hmm. You know, for all of us, not even Southerners.
Yeah.
Yeah. Gosh, it's hard to even
say. It's hard. They're all. Oh, and my mind is going. Flannery O'Connor.
Yes.
A good man is hard to find. There she was.
There you go.
There she goes. Oh, and I. Here's a good story. when I was trying to make a living writing and I gave up everything else, I moved down to this little town in Alabama called Magnolia Springs, Alabama. And on that one street, Winston Groom lived down the street from me and Mark Childress, who wrote Crazy in Alabama. So there were Southern writers in this little town.
That's awesome. That's hilarious. That sounds like a name from a Hallmark movie, too.
Yeah. I wrote a book about that little town. It's called Redbird Christmas. And it was about that little town of Magnolia Springs. And it's the only town, I think, in America now that they have their mail brought by boat. It was fascinating.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. It's right outside of Fairhope. It's right outside of Mobile and Fairhope. Yes. Yeah. Charming. Charming.
I haven't been to Fairhope, but that's on my list.
That's on our list.
Good. It's you love it. It's really nice. It's
yeah.
Really nice.
Yeah. Where do you come up with the titles for your books? Do you get help with that, or is that something that you usually speak into as well? They're always so creative.
Well, thank you. It's just accidents. You know, people will say, "Well, why don't you call it that?" Or "Why don't you do this?" You know. Standing in the Rainbow was a book that I wrote, and a friend of mine told me about a story that she and her two children were driving down a highway, and she said the actual rainbow was right in front of her, and she stopped the car in the middle of the rainbow and got out, and they were standing in the rainbow. And the book was about growing up in the 50s, and so I thought, well, I'll name that Standing in the Rainbow.
Wow. That's
and awesome. Fried green tomatoes at the Whistle Stop Cafe, of course, was from the old lady saying, "Oh, I wish I'm at this nursing home, but I wish I was over at the cafe having a plate of fried green tomatoes." Mm-hmm. And just different things like this one was the little boy. I wanted to say, you know, about who he was, the wonder boy of Whistle Stop, and how he got the name Wonder. Is that he was very curious and he was always, "I wonder why cats have whiskers," or "I wonder why." So that's how he got that name.
That is precious. Wow.
Thank you.
Well, in a year where we have all faced much isolation, this book is a breath of fresh air. I cannot wait to dive in. I can't wait for other people to get their hands on it. I want to encourage our listeners, if you are near an independent bookstore, like if you're in Nashville, maybe go over to Parnassus Books.
Yeah.
You know, seek out maybe an independent store. A lot of them are still doing like a curbside pickup if you don't want to run in yourself. So we do want to encourage everybody, if you have an independent small business selling books, check with them first.
So we're going to fight over this copy on who's going to read it first.
Okay. Well, you know, I'm hoping that it will, with all of the, you know, upset and everything, I'm hoping that this book, what I wanted it to do was to remind people that there's good people out there. There's lovely things going on that we don't get much press, but there's still ordinary people are still out there living a happy life. And
that's right. We need each other.
We do. And I wanted to show the best in human nature, not the worst. I can't look at television. Everything is about how bad people are. And that's not my experience. I think people are great.
I do too. Yeah.
I may be insane, but oh well, I'm happy.
We agree. We're so thankful for you getting to pen a novel. We thought the last one, you tricked us. We thought the last one was your last 4 years ago. And then you pulled a fast one on us. But
I know it. I can't. Something's the matter with me. Stop me before I hurt myself.
Well, it feels very full circle, a very full circle moment and novel for you to come back to. So thank you. On behalf of all your fans, thank you for putting people out there.
I love my readers. They're the best in the whole world. They're the nicest people in the whole world. People say, do you like to go out on book tours? I say, I can't wait. Then my readers are so sweet and so nice, just like you gals, and happy birthday. And what are you going to do for her tonight? Anything fun?
Well, tonight she's just having a meal with her husband.
Okay.
Watch the baby. But we went and did a fun class learning how to make cocktails together. It was really fun.
It was really, and we didn't have to do any of the cleanup. They had everything all chopped for us. It was like a cooking class, but with cocktails. So
That's the best.
Good. Well, we will let you sign off with us. So, Lainey, you want to do it for us?
Peace be with you, Fanny.
And y'all too.
Thank you.
Thank you,
gals. Have a great day.
I hope you do.
Thank you so much.
All right. You take care.
I will. Bye.
Bye.
Plan on flying? It's time to upgrade to a real ID. Because in order to board domestic flights, your driver's license or state-issued ID must be a real ID, or you'll need another acceptable form of identification. So don't wait. Find out how to get your real ID at tsa.gov/real ID. That's tsa.gov/real ID. Or visit your local DMV. And then you'll be cleared for takeoff.